Prison Radio on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.cqut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, or on the second Thursday of every month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio or finding help searching for past programs, email prison@cqut.ca.
Listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CQUT 90.3 FM. My name is Candace, and I'm your host for today's show. Today on the program, we will be speaking with Vanessa Gray about criminal charges she's facing following the shutting down of an Enbridge pipeline near Sarnia, Ontario, that took place in December. We will also be hearing voices from the inside, reactions to the U.S. presidential election. But first, as we do every week, some news items. According to an article published by the UK newspaper The Independent, four inmates being held in the Santa Clara County Main Jail in San Jose, California, succeeded in breaking out of the prison by rappelling down the side of the prison on Wednesday night. Two of the inmates who broke out were caught immediately, but the other two were able to avoid being recaptured, and as of Thursday afternoon, their locations were still unknown. A recent article published by Vice magazine says that the Ontario government is once again under scrutiny for the conditions of the province's prisons. Overcrowding, a long-standing issue in Canadian prisons, remains a huge problem in Ontario's prisons. The overuse of segregation units is also a serious issue in Ontario prisons. According to Chris Jackal, vice chair of the Corrections Division of the Ministry Employee Relations Committee, the Central North Correctional Center has, on numerous occasions, put the prison on lockdown because they say they do not have enough guards to respond if something were to arise. The numbers of guards and other prison employees was also cited as a reason that inmates often have less access to time in the yard, as well as fewer opportunities for Indigenous prisoners to be able to leave their cells to smudge. The lack of support services such as social workers and additional counselors has also been cited as a serious issue, particularly for those inmates who have been placed in segregation due to being perceived as possible threats to themselves, or who have asked to be placed in segregation because they fear for their safety when in general population. Corrections Minister David Orazietti has reportedly asked Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne for more funding for prisons in the province and has also stated that he has sent a team to investigate the conditions in segregation cells across Ontario. The case of Adam Capay has been making recent news as recent reports indicate that the documents used to justify his being held in solitary confinement are incomplete and constitutionally shaky. According to the Globe and Mail, the internal records used to justify Capay's 4 years in solitary confinement in the Thunder Bay Jail, where he is being held, contain several errors and omissions, and raise questions around the legality of Ontario's most restrictive correctional policies. Until last month, Adam Capay was being held in a 9-foot by 8-foot cell with lights that were kept on 24 hours a day. Several different lawyers who have been reviewing the case state that the various forms, such as the segregation decision review form that is created every time an inmate is placed in solidarity, provide only perfunctory explanations regarding extensions to Capay's time in segregation, and there are also instances where the reasons for his segregation being prolonged have been left blank on the forms. Additionally, the sections of the form meant to contain statements from Capay himself have reportedly been left blank. Capay's documents also show that one reason cited for keeping him in segregation is that there have been concerns that he might harm himself, as well as that he might potentially harm staff and other inmates. Paul Champ, one of the lawyers who has been looking at Capay's case, specifically criticized this in saying that placing a person who is suicidal in solitary confinement is shocking, as solitary confinement is not a therapeutic environment. We also have a message of support to share. The Denver Anarchist Black Cross is reporting that Red Fawn Fallis, an Indigenous water protector from Denver, who has been charged with attempted murder at Standing Rock during pipeline protests, is welcome to receiving mail, and you can write to her at Red Fawn Fallis, care of Morton County Detention Center, 205 First Avenue Northwest, Mandan, North Dakota. The zip code is 58554. And for more information about her case, you can visit the Denver Anarchist Black Cross website at denverabc.wordpress.com. And next here on the Prison Radio Show on CQT 90.3 FM, it's 11:07 a.m., we have an interview with land defender Vanessa Gray. She discusses resource extraction in her area, Northern Ontario, and her charges stemming from an action that took place on the morning of December 21st, 2015, when she and two friends, Stone Stewart and Sarah Scanlon, shut down Enbridge's Line 9 on Anishinaabe territory just outside of Sarnia. At approximately 7:30 a.m. on the morning of December 21st, nearly a year ago, the three arrived at the valve site and called Enbridge first to inform them of the action and requested that the pipeline and its flow of oil be turned off. At this point, the three shut down the pipeline's manual handwheel and bike-locked their necks to the valve in an act of civil disobedience to prevent the operation of the pipeline. They were arrested, held overnight, and released with minimal conditions. Then all three were charged with counts of mischief over $5,000, carrying a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison, and mischief endangering life, which is a maximum sentence of life in prison. Stone Stewart was also charged with resisting arrest. And so the three, Vanessa, Stone, and Sarah, are currently awaiting trial to fight these charges.
Puju, Vanessa Gray, Indigenous, Amjanang Donjaba, Anishinaabeni Dao, Makwan Indodam. Hi, my name is Vanessa Gray. I'm from the Amjanang First Nation.
So let's start by talking about your community of Amjanang, which is surrounded by over 60 industrial facilities. What kind of impact does that have on your community and also on your territory?
The problem is with so many refineries producing and refining toxic chemicals so close to our homes, is that it's been happening for so long. They continue to release these chemicals and spill them in the environment. And what happens is, chemicals start to accumulate within our environment, within our bodies. And this is just over many years of companies being there, but also continuing to grow and expand and change the types of products that they are working with. And so we're seeing the water being unhealthy, and we're seeing lots of cancers within our community and respiratory issues due to the air being so toxic. There are studies done on how our health is being impacted, but there's still no accountability being held for these companies.
The president of the First Nations of Quebec, they just recently came out saying they're categorically against Energy East, the Energy East pipeline. And they said in their remarks that it's partly because Aboriginal peoples are on the front lines when it comes to climate change, that they are the first ones to suffer the consequences of climate change. So I was wondering if you had something to say about that, about environmental racism and colonialism and the impacts on your community.
I think Indigenous people are the first to experience the impacts that the companies are having on the land. But climate change is just a product of colonialism due to the extracting happening in countries where Indigenous people have always lived, and they are being displaced from the land. And it's the same story in many countries, but here especially, the tar sands oil is doing enough damage in Alberta, whereas now it's just has gone further to get the product from Alberta and place the product in very unsafe pipelines, unreliable pipelines, and putting it into our own territories. And we are faced with the problem with industry without proper consultation, allowing these companies and their projects to move forward while impacting us the most with the least amount of consultation. And this is why we are seeing the impacts first and most. And this is why we should have the right to say no.
Enbridge has a facility as well on your territory. And could you take us back to the events of last December 21st when you allegedly shut down Line 9 with Sarah Scanlon and Stone Stewart? What might have led you to take such an action, a direct action?
Enbridge is a company that cannot be trusted. And we have seen this type of project with Line 9 fail in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where 6B has ruptured, and it was the same idea of using a very old pipeline for new products. So Enbridge itself is not a company to trust. The procedure for this pipeline to be reversed and to have a whole new product going through the pipeline that this pipeline was not built for is concerning, because we've seen it fail before. It's putting tar sands oil through many drinking sources throughout Ontario and Quebec, which is just a new a danger to like any environment, because it's just impossible to clean up. And we've seen it happened before, we've seen it fail, and we've seen it's still an issue. Enbridge obviously doesn't know how to deal with a tar sands spill because the oil sinks. It's putting our water at risk, and there was no proper consultation with Indigenous people for this project anyway. So this project has no right to go through without an environmental assessment. And it was quickly pushed through, and it should not be running because it is a not unsafe pipeline.
What you said to me brought to mind the fact that the National Energy Board has come under so much criticism, and recently, like, basically all the members resigned because of corruption and meeting Jean Charest, and there's all these calls to completely disband the National Energy Board because the consultation process is so corrupt. So do you have any thoughts on that? Like, is it possible? Can you foresee that there could be, under the current government, an actual proper consultation with Indigenous peoples? Can you envision that, or does that seem like not likely to happen?
I think proper consultation and the right to say no is a simple step. I think if you look at many of the projects in other communities where people are heavily impacted off-site, maybe if we were given the option to say no, we would have said no. Canada is about extracting and is about land theft, and I don't see that working in the way it should for Indigenous people, unless Indigenous people have full rights to the land.
Mm-hmm. And hence the need for direct action and other kinds of means of pressure. You've been charged with mischief endangering life, which is a really serious charge. It carries up to life in prison. Why would you think they have made such an incredibly exaggerated charge against you?
We allegedly took action in a very industry-dense area, and I think there's a lot of fear behind anything happening to infrastructure. I think that's why they are trying to make an example of us. It is completely unacceptable to question industry, to have an opinion for the environment, to talk about Indigenous rights, and I think that's why we were given such heavy charges.
Mm-hmm. Do you think would you say it could be related to the fact that you are an Indigenous activist? Do you think it would have been the same charge if you'd been someone from another community?
I think that has a lot to do with it, yes. But I also feel supported going into any case of defending the land because of the support I have gained over the years for defending the water and land. And I think this hopefully causes a lot of attention on the case and the issue. We should be talking about why we have projects like Line 9, why we have companies like Enbridge with so much power, and who are not being criminalized we are, who are trying to defend the water.
As you were talking, it just occurred to me how strong and steadfast you are in your beliefs, and I was curious about what was it that drew you to activism, like in your earlier life as a young activist, if you could mention kind of what it was that maybe first called you to take action.
It was when I realized I went to Fort McMurray for a healing walk, and I realized that companies like this are not just targeting my territory, but other territories. And it's usually women who are taking on most of the work when it comes to keeping the focus on the water and the land and future generations. And it's not just my community. It's connected to something much bigger when I realized that my responsibility is to my territory, then I realize that there's colonialism, and the genocide that it comes with it is not a historical thing only. It is a continuous thing if Indigenous people are still going without clean drinking water, safe drinking water, or unsafe environments due to the fact that they're Indigenous. It's a racist system, and Canada is guilty and continues to harm Indigenous people by putting the economy before anything, and Canada is, itself is a state of violence. And this is where I feel a huge responsibility to my ancestors' land to do what I can to defend it.
Great. And do you have any messages for other people who might be considering taking direct action, who might be thinking about the charges that you're facing?
Yeah, I think people need to remember that it's not about the charges. The charges are a huge deal, and I know that. But what is more of a concern of mine is how backwards everything is if the water is not protected, and now we have dangerous pipelines infrastructure flowing through our communities. We cannot survive a tar sand spill, and I think there needs to be some urgency behind people's actions when we think about, like, how much time will it be until this, like, unreliable pipeline finally ruptures, or, like, or how far is our government willing to go for the sake of the economy? We should be asking ourselves, why are we not defending the water? Why are we not considering what's going to happen with our environment and our health in the upcoming years if this is the kind of process we're currently in, without environmental assessments, without considering letting Indigenous people be in charge of the land to defend it. There's many things to consider when people talk about direct action, and those are things that I think people need to remember.
Mm-hmm. It does seem really ironic that they're charging you with mischief endangering life when they're running this pipeline through so many water sources for people. I was wondering, what could people do to support you if they want to support you and your legal defense?
So we have a full outline of the case online. We also are selling really cool T-shirts. We have updates online. So all this information can be found on line9shutdown.ca. And there you can donate and buy a T-shirt and share the website and all the information about the cases there.
I also wanted to ask you about the upcoming court case and where you are with that. So have there been any preliminary hearings, or do you have a date set for any appearances?
Yeah, so the preliminary hearing is going to be on February 24th and at the Sarnia Courthouse, and we're asking people to come and join us and stand in solidarity, come and support us. We're trying to fill the courtroom.
Great, thank you so much. You have been listening to an interview with Vanessa Gray, a young woman from Amjinong First Nation who allegedly shut off Line 9 on December 21st, 2015, and is now facing up to life in prison for this direct action.
And for more information about Vanessa's case or how to help, you can visit line9shutdown.ca. It is 11:23 a.m. and you are listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CQT 90.3 FM. You'll want to stay tuned because we will be speaking with Maggie Tobin from the New York City Free Peltier Committee about updates regarding political prisoner Leonard Peltier's case. But first, here's a little taste of the current campaign for clemency. Here is Larry Leventhal and Ramsey Clark speaking about Leonard Peltier's case.
It's time for Leonard Peltier to receive a long-delayed measure of justice. He's been languishing in prison for 4 decades for a crime that evidence shows he did not and could not have committed. The President of the United States can commute that sentence in the name of justice any moment he wants to. He has the power, complete and absolute, under the Constitution. We have to demand that he does it, and we must demand that it happens this year. This very day, each of us and all of us must raise our voices in chorus of millions, of tens of millions. Until that happens, every day is a new crime. Every dawn is a new crime. Every dusk is a new crime against the dignity of the Indian peoples and the honor of the United States of America. Because while Leonard Peltier is in prison, we all are.
Beauty all around. Love will lay hatred down.
Please call the White House today at 202-456-1111 and ask President Barack Obama to grant Leonard Peltier clemency. That's 202-456-1111. It's time for Leonard Peltier to come home.
Hundreds of millions of native indigenous peoples around the world have been imprisoned by the dominant societies under which they exist. This imprisonment has taken many forms. An extreme form, of course, is Leonard Peltier, who for over four decades has been languished in prison for a crime that the evidence shows he could not have committed. It is time in the acts of humanity that he be released, that the president exercise clemency, that this nation be allowed to heal. Release Leonard Peltier. It should be done now.
Is it you or I in jail? Beauty all around. Love will lay hatred down.
Please call the White House today at 202-456-1111 and ask President Barack Obama to grant Leonard Peltier clemency. That's 202-456-1111. It's time for Leonard Peltier to come home.
Cinema Politica launches its Nations and Migrations project with the Quebec premiere of The Crossing, the latest film by Beirut-based documentary filmmaker and photojournalist George Kurien. Screen on Monday, November 28th at 7 p.m. in room H110 at Concordia University. The Crossing travels land and sea with Syrian refugees who tell the stories of their harrowing journeys to new countries and their feats of struggle and hope. Director George Kurien will be joined by Montreal multimedia artist and hip-hop musician Yassine Narsi Al-Saman and activist Ula Hajar for a post-screening discussion. The event is open to all and admission is by donation. The venue is wheelchair accessible. That's Monday, November 28th at 7 p.m. in room H110 Concordia University downtown campus. For more information, visit cinemapolitica.org/Concordia. The Nations and Migration Project is generously supported by the In Spirit Foundation. This screening is a CKUT co-presentation.
Around the bars, I'm burning. My soul is pushed against the bars.
Black Flag with The Bars here on CQT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Prison Radio Show, and we are joined on the phone now by Maggie. Welcome to The Prison Radio Show, Maggie.
Thank you so much.
Perhaps you can introduce yourself. Who are you, and what is the New York City Free Peltier Committee?
Well, I'm a member of New York City Free Peltier. We are a chapter of the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee, which is Leonard Peltier's international committee. The headquarters is in Oregon, but we as a group are part of something bigger called the Indigenous Rights Center, and that's located in Albuquerque. But today, because of computers, we're all very closely connected.
Perhaps you can tell us a little bit about Leonard Peltier. We know that he's an American Indian Movement warrior, and in the 1970s, the United States government was targeting people who are challenging its authority, and he's been in jail since 1975. Can you tell us a little bit more about who is Leonard Peltier?
Well, Leonard was, as you say, a member of the American Indian Movement. It's a rather long, complicated case. I'll do it as quickly as I can. There was, at this time, a lot of turmoil at the Pine Ridge Reservation. in South Dakota. And our tribal chairman was unfortunately very corrupt. There took place something called the Reign of Terror. There were drive-by shootings. He didn't hesitate to have his little private militia, they called themselves, believe it or not, the Goon Squad, just kill people who were opposing him. So some of the more traditional people asked AIM to help, and Leonard was one of those who answered the call. Of course, there was a great deal of tension there, and in 1975, in June, two shiny cars drove onto the reservation. A shootout started between the AIM people and the men driving the car. At the end of the day, they were both found dead. They turned out to be FBI agents. A young Native man named Joe Stuntz was also killed. Well, they absolutely were terrified. They felt they were done for, and they fled. One by one, two by two, they were arrested over the coming weeks, and Leonard went to Canada, which was probably the biggest mistake he ever made. But two of them, who would have been co-defendants, Bob Rubidoux and Dino Butler, were already tried before they got Leonard back from Canada. Their plea was self-defense. They were able to discuss the Reign of Terror, and the jury said, sounds reasonable, acquitted. The FBI, of course, was incensed. Somebody has to pay. So they found a woman on the reservation named Myrtle Poorbear, who was, we would say, somewhat mentally challenged. They wrote up three affidavits, forced her to sign them. They threatened her with all sorts of things. And they presented at least one of them to Canada. Canada said, okay, extradition is possible, but the death penalty is off the table. Leonard was extradited and tried in Fargo, North Dakota, by a judge who was known to be anti-Native. He would not permit a plea of self-defense. He would not permit discussion of the Reign of Terror. He controlled, you wouldn't believe what he did in that trial. In fact, there's a wonderful book called The Trial of Leonard Peltier by Jim Messerschmidt, which goes through all the details. At any rate, Leonard was sentenced to two consecutive years in prison, convicted of murdering these two men. However, during the appeals process, as the years went by, the FBI had to admit, because they had falsified some of the ballistics information, withheld a lot of stuff, witnesses who were on their side but were forced to lie, they retracted their statements, so they had to change the charge to aiding and abetting and admit that they don't know who killed the agents. Leonard, however, is in prison still. He counts his imprisonment from February 6th, 1976. So as of next February, it will be 41 years. He is 72 years old, in poor health. He has diabetes, as do many, many prisoners. He had a stroke a few years back. He has other health problems, the most serious of which is an abdominal aortic aneurysm. They are watching and waiting. The prison people say it's too small to operate. Even if they did operate, that would be an extremely, extremely dangerous operation. So he is really caught between a rock and a hard place. If they don't operate, it could burst and he would bleed out in just 8 or 10 minutes. If they do operate, the operation is so invasive, he could die on the operating table. And that is his dilemma. His only hope is clemency from the President of the United States. Some people say it's a long shot, even with Obama, but we are not going to stop trying. We are trying to get his attention every way that we can. Our latest program has been postcards. His committee printed up thousands of postcards, and us chapters have been taking them out, asking people to fill them in, and we mail them, preferably in large amounts, like even 100 a day, in order to get the attention of the White House mailroom. And that is what we are doing at the moment, hoping and hoping for clemency, maybe sometime in January.
Thanks for that update. I think it's interesting to talk about Leonard Peltier, especially in this year of Indigenous resistance. particularly with events in Standing Rock and all of the solidarity actions surrounding it. I think it's important to remember all of the warriors get captured by the state for resisting oppression and colonialism, and that they won't be forgotten even though we've been in jail for so long. Can you tell us how people can plug into the clemency campaign?
Well, the clemency petition was actually filed in February. It's filed with the Office of the Pardon Attorney. They have the power to sit on it, to send it to the president to recommend granting clemency or to recommend not. We haven't heard from them, of course. We don't expect to. But in the meantime, people can do a lot. Phone the White House. The number is 202-456-1111. That's 202-456-1111. I don't know what you would have to dial at first from Canada. I have no idea. You could write to the president at the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20500. And I have to say, Leonard stands with Standing Rock. He issued a statement a while back on his birthday, which was September 12th. He called in to the Standing Rock radio. There's a little recording of it on his website. And now that I've mentioned the website, this is where you go for information about Leonard, about everything that's going on. They have his statement on supporting Standing Rock. You can listen to, it's not a very good recording, you can't hear it too well, you can listen to his message to Standing Rock on his birthday, and they also have his most recent statement for the National Day of Mourning, which was yesterday. But Standing Rock, there are many, many, many happenings in New York City, for example, in support of Standing Rock. And we urge people, it's all part of the same struggle. The struggle for the environment, for Mother Earth, it's all part of the same struggle. Leonard's arrest was part of that same struggle, trying to gain the rights, the long, long deferred rights for the indigenous people of this world. As I mentioned, the National Day of Mourning, they dedicated to Leonard, but there were many, many banners and signs in support of Standing Rock. We have been to a number of these events here in New York City. Sometimes we've been invited to speak on Leonard's behalf, and we've been getting the postcards filled out on his behalf as well.
Great, Maggie. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for joining us here on the Prison Radio Show on SKUT. Did you have any final thoughts or comments you would like to share with our listeners today?
Well, I just thank you very much for having me on. And please, people, get behind Leonard. This is his last chance. If Obama does not come through, Leonard will die in prison. Call the White House, write to the president, go to Leonard's website. There you'll find all of the information. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. And that was Maggie Tobin from New York City Free Peltier here on CQT 90.3 FM.
still goes on. I can't get used to living without, living without, living without you by my side. I don't want to live alone.
I Want to Break Free by Queen here on the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. Next, we are going to hear some voices from the inside. First, we're going to hear Sean Swain with his podcast, You Are the Resistance. Here he speaks about Free the Women 3. We will also hear many voices recorded by prisonradio.org, reactions to the United States presidential election. So stay tuned here to CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting live from McGill University campus.
I'd like to share with you a recent event here at Warren Correctional that just might demonstrate in full living color just how mentally ill these wackadoodle fascists are. This event involves three prisoners, Collins, Rammel, and Raypole, one of whom lived in the honor block, and two of whom had received a security decrease at the time that this happened, and they were only waiting to transfer to lower security. Now Collins, Rammel, and Raypole are the women's bathroom three. So here's what happened. On October 5th, the three prisoners had visits. Their female visitors all used the bathroom. While in the bathroom, their visitors put things in the trash. That's it. What they didn't know is that the prison investigator, Marty Jones, had placed a hidden camera in the women's bathroom. Jones, whose nickname is Bow Chicka Wow Wow, reminiscent of the guitar lick and the porno background music, claims he was granted permission to install a camera in the women's bathroom. Of course, what investigator Bow Chicka Wow Wow Jones doesn't mention is that he got permission to install the hidden camera in the visiting room in the women's bathroom from the captain of his bowling team. That permission notwithstanding, Bow Chicka Wow Wow Jones didn't bother asking a judge, as the law requires, and he didn't turn over the footage to the judge before viewing it, as the law requires. That means Bow Chicka Wow Wow Jones committed a felony by watching women use the bathroom in Warren Correctional's visitation. According to the conduct reports issued against the three prisoners, their visitors were observed placing what he terms packages into the trash can. Of course, Bow Chicka Wow Wow didn't view the video until the following day, so he didn't recover whatever was put into the trash, so he has no clue what it was. But that didn't stop him from concluding that it wasn't used maxi pads, but was instead.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
But was instead drugs. Bow Chicka Wow Wow doesn't reveal how he can conclude that packages he didn't recover are drugs, and he doesn't describe how the three male prisoners plan to get the packages of drugs out of the trash in the women's bathroom. By the conduct reports, the three prisoners did nothing at all. While accused of attempting to procure drugs, there's no description of any conduct at all, indicating that Collins, Rammel, or Raypole broke any rules in any way. They went to a visit, sat through the visitation, and then went back to their cells. Now, because the three female visitors used the bathroom and used the trash, those visitors are suspended. Further, all three prisoners were railroaded through the Rules Infraction Board, where the total and absolute absence of any evidence never stopped Lieutenant Nelson from finding prisoners guilty. The two who were slated for lower security are now stuck here for at least another year, and all three are housed in the sanctions block, where privileges are greatly curbed. All of this, not to beat a dead horse here, without recovering whatever went into the trash, and without any idea where it went, and without any theory as to how the three prisoners intended to get the unknown items from the trash. But I think the most disturbing thing about all of this is the creepo fascists who run Ohio's prisons have given themselves permission to put hidden cameras in the women's bathroom, contrary to existing laws, and on the basis of some ridiculous pretext that anything tossed into a trash can is drugs. So on this pretext, how many female visitors have been secretly recorded on video using the bathroom? If female visitors coming to see me use the bathroom and place trash in the trash can, which is where it goes, is Bowchicka Wow Wow Jones going to decide they are drug pushers and exile them for life? We're talking about fascists who have decided that using the mail makes you a gang member, telling the truth on the radio makes you a terrorist, and civilians using the trash in the bathroom makes them drug pushers. I think this signals their absolute irrationality, their complete lack of regard for the harm they inflict on people, on human beings struggling along under their oppression. There's no reforming a system that's under the mismanagement of the Bowchicka Wow Wows of the world. The only answer is to topple the entire machine by any means necessary. Let's make September 9th a reality every single day of the year. Free the Women's Bathroom 3 and fire Bowchicka Wow Wow Jones. You can call Warden's assistant, Gestapo Greg Kraft, at 513-932-3388, extension 2010. That's 513-932-3388, extension 2010, and express your rage. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from Warren Correctional Institution in Lebanon, Ohio. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at Sean Swain, 243-205, Warren, CI, P.O. Box 120, 5787 State Route 63, Lebanon, Ohio, 45036. For updates on his situation, his bid for U.S. President in 2016, and more writings by Sean can be found at seanswain.org.
Malik Caldoun. I am calling from an Indiana Department of Corrections, Wabash Valley Correctional Facility, and this is the greatest American hypocrisy. All power to the people. Since when did conscious people elect sexual predators and open white supremacists to the office of the President of these United States? Since when have anyone got elected into the White House as Commander-in-Chief of the free world that has no background in the political scene whatsoever? People who hated and desired the black President Barack Obama killed for occupying the White House voted for and secured the election of money mogul and venture capitalist Donald Trump. I'm not mad or shocked, for we are only witnessing a reawakening of racism and institutional white supremacy in this fascist country. While I am loving how our activists and youth are protesting in droves in opposition to his election, being an advocate and support of women empowerment, I felt the election of Hillary Clinton could symbolize female empowerment. So I was looking forward to her nomination. While I understand she has some issues herself, she, however, represents through her life's work and political career the greatest skills and experience to be in charge of this country. Yet again, the ugliness of a racist country steeped in sexism and predominantly controlled by white men, they know the election of Hillary Clinton would have overturned a lot of sexist policies and laws in place to limit the oppression of women. Donald Trump is now a symbol that encourages all white supremacist organizations. All the Southern Indiana correctional officers here at this prison are beaming with extreme excitement. Their prayers were answered. Capitalism, fear, hate, ignorance navigated this election to its victory. I call on all activists, revolutionary groups, left-wing comrades to create active spaces to hold think tanks and self-defense classes. Soon, we will see a rise in emotional hate crimes and racial acts against people of color and our European and foreign comrades living here in America. Secure your legal license to carry or possess your own personal firearm for protection. This is your constitutional right. Self-defense and survival determination is not a crime. It's a right. I am Sunni Muslim. I am not a terrorist. My obligation is to protect and serve the people, not harm them. Power to the people and power to the people who love freedom. Anyone wanting a direct link or line to me can send an email or a text like communication. Go to www.jpay.com and set up your own personal account. Shoot me an email. Forever committed to serving you, your brother, Brother Khalfani Malik Khaldun.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
It's movement time. As the Trump presidency takes shape, there is wailing and gnashing of teeth. Disbelief meshes with despair, and some are, quite frankly, desolate. Dry your tears, blow your noses, and join movements of resistance to this madness. Blacks in America have never known a time when resistance wasn't necessary, including life under a black president. For centuries, for generations, people have had to struggle for freedom, for respect, for justice. Why should this time be any different? The ancestors, like the revered Frederick Douglass, lambasted Abraham Lincoln as a fool or a coward who wouldn't fight the Civil War with thousands of willing black troops. Said Douglass, if there is no struggle, there is no progress. Said Douglass, power concedes nothing without demand. So let us struggle. Let us build movements that lift our hearts. Let us remake our history with the brick and mortar of struggle. From imprisoned nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And you are listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CQT 90.3 FM. We want to leave you with some words by Leonard Peltier on Standing Rock. This was recorded by Spirit Resistance Radio.
I'm sitting here in Coleman 1, talking to you on the phone, and today's my birthday. I'm 72 years old, and I now have 60 years in prison with good time, over 20 years good time, got 41 years in prison, and with good time, got over 60 years credit from time served. And I'm waiting on that clemency, see what happens to clemency, and I appreciate everybody's help and support. So, thank you very much. You guys know that, you know, back in the day there, we weren't out there just out to raise hell for no reason whatsoever. You know, we were on the verge of being terminated. Two reservations had already been terminated, and they were going to terminate. Oh, everything was supposed to be completed by 1984. We weren't going to have no more nations. We weren't going to have no more reservations. So we stood up for them. We stood